staging a comeback worldwide.
A paralysis that affects children.
Treating sickle cell anemia in Africa.
And mortality in the United States in 2016.
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed Double T, your weekly look at the medical headlines from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso. I'm Elizabeth Tracy, a medical journalist at Johns Hopkins, and this will be posted on December 7th, 2018.
And I'm Rick Lang, president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. And Elizabeth, usually we're recording in Texas and Baltimore simultaneously. This time I happen to be attending an FDA meeting in Washington, D.C., and we're able to record face-to-face, and I thank you for allowing that to happen.
I thank you for that also. It's quite interesting. And we're going to reveal to our listeners that you are now the head of this committee that's evaluating cardiac devices. So if they have any issues with that, they can send them right to you.
And at least for the next 4 years, that's the case. So Elizabeth, when we first started, we were recording face-to-face for about 4.5 years before I moved from Hopkins. So let's start again. Where do you want to go?
Why don't we talk first about this Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report relative to this measles recrudescence worldwide, because it's such a shame and it's something that I frankly am really concerned about, and I bet you are too. The World Health Organization, lo these many years ago, said, hey, we have this objective. We'd like to get all of these kids covered with 2 doses of the measles vaccine. And the bad news is there's a tremendous amount of data relative to this, but the bad news is that actually just in the last year for which data is available, so 2016 to 2017, the incidence of measles is increasing and measles mortality is increasing also. And there are certain regions in the world in which this is especially bad, the Americas, Europe even, Africa, Eastern Mediterranean region, and this is extremely concerning.
The latest studies suggest that the measles vaccine has prevented over 21 million deaths. Now, between 2000 and 2017, the increase of using measles vaccines increased from 72 to 85%. And as a result, the annual report of measles incidence has decreased about 83%. And annual estimated measles deaths have decreased about 80%. But we had some initial improvement, and then as you suggest, now it looks like we're headed in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and this is sometimes because kids aren't getting even the first dose, but often because they're not getting the second. And at least in this particular report, I'm not seeing anything that looks like a strategy to overcome whatever the barriers are.
Well, this is worldwide we're talking about, and there are a number of things that are happening. This, by the way, is an important part of it, and that is just the information saying, listen, we were doing well, and suddenly we're not doing as well as we'd like to. At least in the United States, part of the issue has been parents have been reluctant to get their kids immunized because of concerns, unfounded concerns, that the measles vaccine can be harmful. And we know, actually, measles is much more harmful than any of the vaccinations.
So I guess our public health message, at least here domestically, is look, parents, you really need to get your kids vaccinated. And this is clearly not just something that benefits them, but everybody.
Everybody, this is not something that's limited to any particular nation, especially with travel worldwide. People bring in measles from the outside, or individuals that are not vaccinated can get measles when they travel overseas. So everybody needs to be up to date with their vaccinations.
Well, since we're talking about really gigantic data sets, why don't we take a look at a massive report that's from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, taking a look at mortality in the United States.
Last year and this year, life expectancy has actually decreased in the United States. For the preceding 15 to 20 years, there's been a gradual increase in life expectancy for both men and women, to a large extent because we're addressing the major causes of mortality, heart disease and cancer, and mortality from those has gone down. Unfortunately, what we've seen in the last couple of years is an increase in unintentional deaths, usually that's drug overdoses, and that's anywhere from the ages of 15 to 45 or 50 years of age, and a marked increase in the rate of suicides as well. That increase in suicide spans all ages, from kids under the age of 14 to even men up to age 75.
Very, very frightening data, I think. I did see something that looked somewhat hopeful, where they suggested just today that at least from drug overdoses, it looks like it may have plateaued.
I hope so, because in 2016, there were almost 64,000 deaths from drug overdoses. we're spending a huge amount of money and time in the United States to overcome drug overdose deaths, and particularly opioids, which are, seem to be concentrated primarily in the Northeast. West Virginia, for example, has a much higher rate than any other state in the United States, followed by Pennsylvania, Ohio. Addressing this will go a long way towards restoring our continued increase in life expectancy. And if we don't address it, we're going to continue to see declines.
What about the increase in suicides?
This is a problem not limited to any particular age group. It's more marked in those aged of 25 to 45, but it's one of the top 10 causes of death in all age groups. We need to address some of the mental and behavioral health issues and some of the chronic diseases also that cause older individuals to consider suicide. We need to be able to realistically study where firearms plays a role in this. It's clear that where there's more access to firearms, there are more firearm-related suicides and more suicides overall as well. So this needs to be a multi-pronged approach.
Is there a relationship among this data set between suicidality and depression?
This particular study did not address that.
Let's turn from here to the New England Journal of Medicine. This issue of the treatment of sickle cell disease among children in sub-Saharan Africa. When we first talked about doing this study, I kind of disparaged it a little bit because it seemed like it didn't have very robust public health implications. Then we talked about it and it became abundantly clear that in fact it does. Sickle cell anemia, of course, I would say in my chaplain role, I have seen some of the worst pain I've ever seen that was virtually intractable, and something clearly well worth getting our arms around with regard to treatment. So this hopeful study took a look at 635 kids. They fully enrolled 635 children. 606 of them completed screening and then began receiving the drug hydroxyurea. They were able to keep 94%+ of kids in treatment at 3 years, and they took a look at a number of outcomes relative to hydroxyurea treatment. And those were this, especially the vaso-occlusive pain episodes that are just so terrible to bear witness to. Other things too, malaria, transfusion, malaria infection, and death. And lo and behold, they saw about a 50% reduction in many of these values with the use of hydroxyurea, which is cheap and easily available. And so this sounds like, wow, this is amazing. And we can even do this in sub-Saharan Africa where there are lots of barriers to care.
There are about 100,000 persons in the United States that have sickle cell that are treated. But in sub-Saharan Africa, there are 300,000 babies born each year with sickle cell. It's about 1% of live births. So this is a major problem in an area that doesn't have a lot of access to healthcare. So what this study shows, first of all, is you can do a very large, well-controlled clinical trial in sub-Saharan Africa. That's important to know. Secondly, a medication that's available and not very expensive is incredibly efficacious in this patient population. And these kids are oftentimes malnourished and have other chronic conditions. So that to know that treatment works in them and can reduce the morbidity and mortality by 50%, that's pretty remarkable. That's why we are reporting on it. It's terrific news.
Speaking of children then, let's turn back domestically. We've got this outbreak, I'm going to call it, of acute flaccid myelitis, abbreviated AFM. And this study at JAMA Pediatrics looking at, gosh, how can you discern the difference between that particular condition and others that may have a similar presentation?
To put it in perspective, people have called this a polio-like illness. It affects children, and there have been, about 60 or 70 cases reported in the United States between 2012 and 2018. And it seems to have a seasonal variance. What we haven't been able to do is to find out what causes it and what the appropriate treatment is. And part of that is because this particular neurologic disease has overlap with other conditions. So what the authors attempted to do was to use a case definition of AFM and see if they could distinguish it from other similar neurologic diseases. And the reason for that is because if we do that, then we'll have a better idea of finding out what the cause is and what the proper treatment is. So what were the distinguishing features? They looked at 45 individuals, and what they discovered that really is only about 3/4 of them had AFM. The other 1/4 were misclassified. And those that have AFM, it's usually asymmetric. It affects one side of the body more than the others. There's a usually fairly rapid onset over hours to days. Oftentimes, there's a febrile or flu-like illness that precedes it. Then it has very characteristic MRI findings that affect the gray matter. And then finally, when they do a lumbar puncture or spinal tap, there aren't really any distinguishing features. So all of these together define the group that we call AFM and should help us determine what the causes are and appropriate therapy.
Isn't it affects the gray matter in the spinal cord?
It does. It affects the gray matter in the spinal cord and perhaps in the midbrain, but it spares the major cortex.
I have heard the rather daunting information that among all comers who are diagnosed with AFM, sequela, especially neurologic sequela, occur in 75%.
And that's true, Elizabeth. It can present as either minor weakness to full-blown paralysis where it requires kids being on a ventilator. We know of at least a couple putative causes, that is enterovirus, and there are different types of enterovirus, enterovirus 68 versus 71, for example. And kids are more likely to recover from one than the other. And then there are some other putative viral conditions as well, perhaps CMV that may be associated with it. One of the things that physicians need to know is if a child comes in with what looks like paralysis and it's asymmetric, even if it's minor, they need to do a full evaluation, not only looking at the spinal fluid, but looking at other bodily fluids, seeing if we can identify a viral cause. Things like nasopharyngeal swabs or urine or serum. And it has to be done early in the disease.
Yeah, that's been the big problem, hasn't it? Because by the time these kids present, any infectious agent has not been able to be recovered.
Absolutely. And again, it's called a polio-like illness because for individuals that have seen patients that have had polio or people that have been around for decades know that even after you recover from the acute polio virus, the neurologic manifestations last for years. And in many of the kids, it seems to be the case as well.
Well, let's just hope that eventually we're going to figure out what's causing this.
And more importantly, that we find some treatment, because right now we have no effective treatment and no studies that have shown anything that shows any promise at this particular time.
Rather a down note to end on, but here we are. So that's a look at this week's medical headlines from Texas Tech. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all listen up and make healthy choices.